Okay, folks, we're going to give it another. Did that echo? Hello. Okay, there we go. We're going to get going in about 3 minutes. I know it was a very abbreviated lunch break, and there's nowhere close by, so about another 3 minutes for the panel to get organized. Hello, everybody. Thanks for coming back after a very abbreviated lunch. We are going to do a little bit of an adjustment to the agenda. Because the session we had just before lunch, we did not get through a couple of the key items that our members need some guidance on, and also some issues that we want to make sure that the community is aware of. So we're going to go back to that session for a few minutes to start, and then we will move on to the currently scheduled sessions, Block 4 and Block 5. I would just like to acknowledge that, as you could tell by the discussion in the previous session, it is a very detailed set of topics and very easy to quickly drill down into the detail. So I would ask certainly for the presenters and those who are very knowledgeable about this subject to remember this session is for people in the room who are sure to have less knowledge than the folks who are deep in the process. Please bear in mind that this is a conversation for the room, that we should try to focus it more on high level and principles so we can provide guidance to the people who have to think about this, as opposed to debate details amongst yourselves. As soon as this is done, then we'll return to the currently scheduled program. And with that, Mathieu.
Thank you very much, Byron. Thank you, everyone, for their ability, and we haven't frightened everyone out of the room, apparently, and maybe some others will join. So to finish off these questions about the key consensus items, I think what was very fruitful in this first session was the process that was outlined by Roelof about introducing, in few words, the different aspects, then having the different members say if they have something to clarify about it or a different opinion, and then going to the room for comments and then ensuring we have. So the next was the standard bylaw change. We've already discussed that a bit, but maybe Jordan can recap a little bit in high-level terms.
Yes, thank you, Matthew. Jordan here from .nz. So the standard bylaws changes power is a rejection of changes. So any process that leads to a bylaw change, if the bylaws change causes concern, there could be a community discussion, and then the bylaws change could be rejected by the community working together. And remember, later this afternoon, we're talking about decision thresholds to make that decision.
Any members wanting to provide any clarification or do? No? Any question from the room on this? Jörg? Just for remote participants and the record.
So this is Jörg Schweiger with DNIC. Understand it correctly. So there would be a PDP, and that would be in favor of changing a non-fundamental bylaw. This would be completely under the power of the very community that has been raised issue, or could that be blocked by some other part of other communities?
It's the same situation as for the fundamental bylaws. Yeah. So that's why the same objection that Chris raised before needs to be raised in this context as well. So Matt's raised that as an issue to raise with the CCWG. So it wouldn't be the policy that could be rejected. There were bylaws changes required to implement that consensus policy, those ones would be up for debate and potentially for rejection.
But with that same concern being raised to the CCWG, does process raise any other strong concern or any objection? Moving on to the next then, the board recall means also known as spilling the board.
I don't know if it needs any more explanation. Through the same deliberative community discussion, if it was suggested that the whole ICAM board should be removed, the power to that would be there. And that's a power that's attracted general support in the public comments the CCWG received.
Including from the board. on the principle. Any questions, comments on that, Demi?
Well, question of the difference between the two categories elected by the communities and appointed by the NOMCOM. It seems, first of all, that there are different processes in each of them, and the NOMCOM appointees are more stable in some way. The process has to move it toward the whole community, not just the... Maybe you could create two categories at the board.
So the power we're discussing here is the ability to remove the whole board in one shot. And later today on the agenda, we'll go into how to remove one particular director, whether it's NOMCOM appointee or appointed by SO or ACs. That's really the, well, some say the nuclear weapon, where there's absolute total disagreement. That's what we are discussing here is the recall of the whole board. Obviously, that has the highest threshold possible in the decision making, but it doesn't have two categories. It's both down. Mary.
Okay, thank Mary Uduma for the record. We have difficulties with the question of removing the whole board. The ICANN bylaw says names one seat to 15 seats, and there must have been a thinking behind that to have the stability, to have experience, to make sure that ICANN continues to function. And if in a once you remove all the board, so the bylaw, don't we consider that we are going that will be going against the bylaw? I know that is a something that you are saying will be remotely done, but there could be the possibility that one is insisting that it will be done. The high threshold notwithstanding. So I don't know. I'm still finding it about to create it comparing with what the bylaw says as at today. Why do we want to go that long, that route?
Jordan, would you like to explain how we guarantee continuity in that case?
So it's a really good point to raise, Mary, because it's important that ICANN always has a board that can govern the company. To trigger this power and to make a decision to do it, the SOs and ACs that appoint directors have to name the person who would serve as an interim director before a decision is taken, and the NOMCOM would be asked to have two people in reserve who could serve on such an interim board. So if the board is removed, first of all, along with the president and CEO, they would form an interim board. Secondly, an appointment process within 120 days would see the SOs and the NOMCOM and the AC that appoints directors appointing replacement directors, and they would rejoin the same seats 1 to 15. They'd be appointed back to those, and the pattern of replacement would continue as if it hadn't been interrupted. So that's the steps the CCWG has taken. I hope that's not too much detail.
I think it goes to show that there's been a lot of design about how to guarantee the continuity of ICANN's governance in this extreme case. Any other questions? Anyone who would object or have strong concerns about this particular power? Okay. Yeah, we're all very careful about it. We feel a certain uneasiness, and of course that's going to be probably, if the question ever arises, I expect it's not going to be solved in intersessional or anything. That's going to be the biggest crisis that ICANN can live with, and it probably will come after a certain number of events that would trigger very, very strong community decisions. I have no doubt that community itself, I mean, even in the other parts of the community, no one is going to use that lightly. Mary?
Back?
Yes, go ahead, Mary.
I'm sorry, I'm coming back. I don't know whether the CCWG considered the issue of the bylaw on the tenure and, 3 years, 3 terms. Instead of going to removing the board, why not we look at shortening the tenure of board members? By the time you are 2 years and there's a new election, would have been able to evaluate what, whether you can go on or not instead of going through this route. I strongly believe that this route of removing all the board members at the go doesn't sit well with me. But, well, I'm just a person. But I want to know whether this was considered. Instead of removing them, shorten the number of years they stay there, shorten it. A decade is too much. 9 years is a decade.
These are very good points. Do you want to answer directly, or because there's Jay on the line who was sitting, who was standing before you?
Then. It's on this point.
Yes,
on
this point. And Jay
it's
as well.
On this point.
And Jay is to reply as well.
Yes. Okay, Jay. So I think that that actually having good board members do up to 9 years is okay. And so shortening it just in advance because there may be a problem at some point, we don't need to do. And I think that if you do get a bad board, then they will do their best to remain, which will include lengthening terms. We all know of presidents in countries that have two-term limits who have the constitution changed so that they can have longer than a two-term limit. It's not uncommon. So having this reserve power as the very, very fallback position is absolutely vital. Otherwise, there will be simply too much of a long, long struggle to do anything else.
Thank you very much, Jay. Roloff, would you add something? Because I think we need to move on to the other topics. We've already quite late. Demi, a last short word.
Just to remember also that the board has colored the mandates. Then you have a just elected board member and another terms, 3-year term. Then you remove also the same, they are just elected.
So, and to answer directly Mary's questions, that has been given some consideration in the CCWG. And that's, I mean, the balance was struck as is. But the point is very valid. That was an alternative that was to be considered. Conscious of time, so is there any strong objection, strong concern on this? No. So we're moving to the last item from this morning, which is the discussion that's taking place in the group regarding the human rights. And for that, I would like to call upon Nigel to introduce very briefly before the members can offer their perspective.
Thank you, Chair. Hopefully, this is going to be A, quick, and B, something on which we can all agree. This is a little bit of an overview of where Work Programme 4 in the CCWG has got, which I've been working together with Leon, and quite a long list of characters, some of which have been more active than others, but that's the nature of things. Okay, if I click here, maybe I get to the next page, is that right? Fine. ICANN and human rights. A few of you may remember a few years ago I raised the issue of ICANN's obligation or lack of it to respect human rights with the then CEO, Rod Beckstrom, and got a flea in my ear for my trouble. I was told to take it back to the CCNSO by Twitter message. This started out for me by looking at the .XXX IRP decision, which the learned judge actually addressed the issue of whether or not ICANN was bound by international law. International law, of course, being normally binding on governments and not private companies. And there's something in ICANN's articles called Article 4, which gives, under California law, a binding commitment to ICANN to follow, quote, applicable international law. But it's very vague, and it leaves open the question of which laws. So now we come forward to transition, and particularly accountability. Now, the ultimate accountability, as far as I'm concerned, is that the organization that we all work with should respect internationally accepted standards of human rights, which normally, as I say, relate between human beings and governments. Private corporations, which is what ICANN will become entirely if there's no government involvement, have no human rights obligations in law, except the Article 4 vague thing that we talked about. But ICANN is also, in California, a public benefit corporation. And it seems to us that it's necessary to entrench, before the transition, a really basic, universally agreed, accepted base level before the US government should let go. How would you do it? Fundamental bylaw. And there are three possibilities that we seem to have addressed. Very simple statement. ICANN will respect human rights. ICANN will respect international human rights as per the Universal Declaration on Human Rights. Or even ICANN will accede to the United Nations principles on human rights for business. Apologies for the various spelling mistake typos. This was put together in a bit of a rush. And the latter is designed for private corporations which have human rights used to address. Is there agreement? Well, yes and no. The board rather politely rejected the idea as being premature. Our idea is, if not now, when? If we don't do it now, there'll be never another opportunity. Certain people made concerns about what the human rights principles for business might mean in the context of CCTLDs. Some rather fantastic and far-fetched scenarios put forward. But there's a consensus in favour of, in Workstream 1, that is, before the transition is allowed, having a high-level status, committing the corporation to respect, basically, international recognised standards of human rights, and to do detailed work on that, perhaps the business stuff, in Workstream 2. What next? ICANN doesn't have much credibility if it rejects human rights irrelevant to what we do, and multi-stakeholderism has to mean shouldering some of the obligations that would otherwise be borne by governments, and that's actually in ICANN's mission in Article 3. I think that's lessening the burden of government was the phrase that was used. And that's basically where we are. Chair.
Thank you very much, Nigel, for a fact-based presentation. Anyone has questions? Any strong objection, concern in the room about proposal as described by Nigel, which is about inserting, at this point in Workstream 1, a general mention of the respect of human rights within ICANN's mission and in its operations? No. Good. So I think, Byron, that's where I can hand it over to you, as we've now reached a point where it's time for lunch. It was time for lunch, so just where you see. And I'm sure we'll make up for this useful time that we spent discussing this. I hope it was useful to us. Actually, in terms of guidelines, it's going to be useful for us as members. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. We are now going to move on to the agenda item that was actually scheduled for this time period. We had a relatively long session planned, so we will have to tighten up each of the segments. I believe everybody for this panel is already here. Thank you very much. We are covering a number of the more contentious subjects now, or subjects that don't have clear consensus at this point. In the agenda itself, you will see all of the specific items. Before we get going, in the spirit of continuous improvement, I thought there was a lot of good dialogue in the previous session, although it took us a little bit to get going. I would like to try to follow the same basic principle as we were following through the latter stages of the previous session. And again, just remind all our panelists who have deep expertise on this subject, hard-won deep expertise, that the real focus of this session is for the people in the room who don't share your deep expertise yet, but need to become educated and informed enough to be able to provide guidance and to be comfortable with where we as the CCNSO are going. So if we can keep it at a high level, keep it at a principle-based level, as opposed to the nitty-gritty detail. I would also encourage everybody from the room where there's lack of understanding or lack of clarity, please, this is our opportunity as a community to ask these questions of the panelists who have spent a lot of time digging into the issues and the detail. You will note that Leslie was supposed to be the moderator here. Unfortunately, Leslie has fallen ill, and Roloff has very graciously stepped up to be moderator with very little notice and a very short time to prepare, but he's certainly well-versed in the subject matter. So thank you very much, Roloff, for doing that. He will be the moderator. asking the questions and moving the dialogue forward. I will be acting as chair, primarily in a timekeeper role during the session, and then try to wrap up the points as I have heard them over the course of the next 90 minutes or thereabouts. So with that, our first topic is around the IRP and the exclusion of CCDLD delegations and redelegations. The key panelists on this particular topic are Becky, Jordan, and Martin.
Byron, maybe I can have half a minute before we start. Is there a possibility that we use the mics as, what is it, roving mics, I think? Roaming? Because I think, well, for the people who are somewhere in the middle of a line, it's already difficult to get up to the mic, but also I think it now sometimes stops people from actually asking a question or commenting because they have to stand up here in the front of the room and face. So if you could take care of that. I have one that I can take around. There's one more. I don't know if we have a spare one. My second point is to the room. I think we have already noticed this morning that sometimes this subject or these subjects are almost incomprehensible if you haven't been spending so much time on it as we, the members of the CCWG, have been doing. But the other side is that this is probably one of the most important subjects we've ever been dealing with. So it would be so nice if we could make this so interesting that you would all stop watching your laptops and contribute, because what we need from you is guidance on the subjects that we are now going to deal with. We've had some flack from people from other communities accusing of us of not being connected enough with our constituency. I don't think that's right, but I think there's always room for doing it better. So we need your input. And you can only give that in a good way if you follow the discussion. Tell us when you cannot understand what we're talking about, and keep telling us that until you understand what we're talking about or we have explained it in such a way that now it's comprehensible, and then give us your input. So please, bear with us and try to actively participate. Now, the first subject is going to be introduced by Becky, if I'm not mistaken. And I think most of us know what the IRP is, the independent review process. Going to be changed in the course of this whole thingy, and Becky is going to explain how that might affect us.
Thank you. Sorry. We get the slide from this morning's presentation that there's just one page on the IRP enhancements. Thanks. It was in the deck that Mathieu was working from earlier this morning. So the independent review process has been a long-standing process at ICANN. Not the one I sent, but in Mathieu's deck. Although it has a long and somewhat sullied history, it has only been used three times in ICANN's history, in some ways the uses have been controversial. It's also been there have been many complaints that it was very expensive and not particularly accessible. So. For the enhanced independent review panel, we've made some recommendations. First of all, rather than picking up three panelists anywhere, for each individual dispute as it arises, what we've proposed is that there be a standing panel of at least seven members. From geographical diversity, not just geographical diversity, but diversity in terms of language and and diversity in terms of legal and cultural diversity as well. But the notion of having a standing panel is that you would have panelists who were familiar with and understood ICANN and the DNS itself, and so the decisions would be based more on an intimate understanding of this organization, its unique aspects, and the community that it serves, and would not be such a sort of straightforward and random application of commercial law. The notion would be that the job of the standing panel would be to enforce the community's exercise of the powers that we discussed, the power to spill the board or approve bylaws or reject bylaws, et cetera. It also would be available for anybody who has been materially harmed by action or inaction on ICANN's part in violation of the bylaws. It is also available to resolve disputes related to the IANA transition, so SLAs and the like. There is a specific exception at the request of the CCNSO and the CC participants in the and CWG, I guess, collectively, so that would be the CCTLD community. Disputes regarding delegations and revocations of CCTLDs are not covered by the independent review panel. That would be available in the event that the CC community got together, undertook a policy development process, decided it was desirable to have some form of dispute mechanism available. It does not prejudge the thinking and working of this community with respect to that. The enhancements provide for a community IRP, which would be funded by ICANN, so that in the event that the community collectively, working through the community forum, felt like some action or inaction that ICANN took violated its bylaws, there would be a way for the community to bring an independent review complaint that would be funded by ICANN. And then there are some changes to the standard of review and also the decisions of an independent review panel would be available to guide future ICANN actions. So lawyers would say decisions of the panel would have precedential value in the sense that they could be taken into account by panelists in the future. And they also would be able to provide guidance to the ICANN board as to how a panel might react to something they're planning to do. So the purpose of this, obviously, is to reduce the need to resort to the independent review dispute resolution processes in the future by providing guidance. And then finally, and this is the biggest thing that we will be launching here, in Dublin with respect to the independent review panel. We will be constituting a subgroup to work on the enormous number of details regarding the operational rules that would be applied, the changes to the bylaws that would be needed to implement this. In some ways, the independent review, because it is a sort of a constitutional court for ICANN and it has the ability to decide whether ICANN has acted in a way that violates its bylaws, it has been called kind of the crown jewels, the guardian of accountability. But obviously, details must be carefully thought through. So that is the work that will be commencing as we go forward.
Am I correct if I say that aspect of the change is that the outcome of the IRP will be binding and legally enforceable?
It will be binding and legally enforceable. Now, I just want to clarify that when we say binding, what we mean is that the panel will have the power to say, ICANN, you violated your bylaws in doing that. It will not have the power to direct ICANN how to fix that. It will still be up to ICANN to figure out a way to fix what it has done. So it is not determining, you know, sort of awarding damages or telling ICANN what to do in the way a normal court would.
Maybe first, are there any questions?
So can I just check on the enforceability point at the end of this, that that's very much determinant on whether we're looking at the member model, the designator model, or anything else there?
It is the degree to which an independent review panel decision is enforceable is along the same spectrum that we have discussed with respect to enforceability, that in the membership model, it is the community powers are most clearly enforceable. In the designator model, there is enforceability. It's a slight, you know, it's enforceable, although the ultimate backstop is spilling the board. And so it goes from there as you go along. Now, ICANN has said it intends to agree to be bound by decisions of the independent review panel in any case. And it has also said that it feels that there are significant constraints on it to behave in a way that would be contrary to a decision of the panel. But yes, you know, the closer to the membership model you are, the more comfort you have with respect to enforceability.
Okay. Because we all know that they could say that they are implementing a decision of this and not do it at all. What we can't do is trust this alone as enough. It has to come together with one of those other models.
That's one of those other powers, yes. I think.
Yes, I think that's correct.
So, Becky, right now there is an independent review mechanism that exists within the ICANN bylaws, and as you noted, it's costly, it's not very accessible at times, but it is available to the CC community. Now, if you go forward with the enhanced review panel, that existing mechanism still be available to the CC community?
So the CWG, the communication from the CWG, was that the enhanced IRP, which will replace the existing independent review panel, would not be available for delegations and revocations of CCPLD subject to any kind of policy development by this board. So to the extent that that access was theoretically available to a CCTLD right now, I suppose you could say it would not be going forward. Having said that, this is it's a serious double-edged sword if you think about it, because if you want to make...
Becky, maybe I may just interrupt you for a moment. You are now specifically, and I think Ellen was, but you didn't mention it, you are specifically talking about CCTLD delegations or revocations. You're not talking about other CCTLD matters, right?
Nothing other than delegations or revocations. To the extent a CCTLD has been harmed.
Just wanted to
clarify. Yes. The exclusion is very specific and very limited.
Have you finished your point?
Because I just want to say, it's, you know, it sounds like a good thing, but this is a double-edged sword, because to the extent a CCTLD could claim that ICANN's bylaws have been violated by revocation of a delegation, you know, a country could claim that ICANN's bylaws have been violated by failure to revoke a delegation. So I don't pretend to know all of the thinking behind the CWG, the CCNSO's views on this, but I think that the view was that there was need for further thought about this particular issue, particularly in light of the implementation of the framework of interpretation.
But I seem to remember that on the earlier phase, we asked the community, do you want this particular subject to be part of the stewardship transition process? And I think we all agreed, no, it will have to come later.
Correct. Right?
So we're kind of anticipating policy development process to come up with something.
Correct.
If we ever succeed. Jordan, you want to comment?
So the reason I'm on this panel is to raise exactly this issue. Today, if the IRP, however weak it is, can deal with here's my fear scenario. We're an independent CCTLD in .nz. We're not run by the government. We're not a government department. At the moment, if something broke and failed in ICANN, and there was a redelegation effort by ICANN, if ICANN didn't like what we were doing or saying and decided to redelegate .nz to someone else, we could use the existing IRP to try for that. But if it acted consistent with the bylaws, it would be a substantive matter. And the NTIA, observing that it was acting inappropriately, would stop it. The NTIA wouldn't agree to that redelegation. It would use its reserve powers, the stewardship thing, to protect us. Now, my fear is that in after the transition, after the NTIA no longer has that right, so it's directly relevant to now, we're saying we're going to run a PDP process in the CCNSO to work out how to deal with disputes about delegation, redelegation, revocation issues. What I'm concerned about is the gap in between those two things. Transition next September, all going well according to the timetable. PDP, you tell me. I haven't been here for a PDP, but I was told it takes more than 9 months. That sounds reasonable. So the question we asked the ICG was, does there need to be something else? Not for every Tom, Dick, and Harry, not for some random participant in ICANN to query a redelegation that we've asked for, but for us as CCTLD managers to have some route of appeal or correction if things inside the ICANN environment break down. Now, I don't know if the IRP is the right way to do that. I don't know if, say, a moratorium where the board cannot do a redelegation and revocation before our PDP is ready is the answer. I also almost don't mind if we say, yeah, we're happy with that gap, we'll trust the ICANN board for that period. But I want us to be clear about the answer, whatever it is.
And the question is also, is there really a gap? Because is there something that we have now that might actually work? I don't think we can answer that question because we have never used it. And after the stewardship transition, we will have these five powers. So as a CC community, we will not be able to stop the board from doing something wrong, but the whole community can, if I'm
sure.
Yeah, and then you. Martin first.
Thanks, Roloff. I think I'd actually go back to the work of the CWG, because when the CWG started, we did have a very clear message from the CCNSO community that we did need to have some form of review process. And that condition of reviewing was built into the principles that the CWG wrote and that are part of its proposal. So Annex C and appeals appears twice under 5.6 and under 7.5. So, you know, those are things you go and look at and see that there was a request. Our problem then became that as soon as we started looking at what would be the grounds for doing the appeal, it became very, very difficult because, as we all know, our RFC 1591 makes a specific requirement for us serving the local community and the local community being the people who should be deciding on the delegation and revocation of CCTLDs. No, okay, I'm simplifying the language just to try and make the point that we have actually got something that for some countries becomes a national sovereignty issue, and certainly one of the concerns I think I would have is when we get to a seven-member IRP, then we probably, if there were to be a contested redelegation of .UK, there probably wouldn't be a British panellist on that. There probably wouldn't be an understanding of UK law on that. And that would lead me to a serious problem on extraterritoriality, where ICANN is the sort of almost a nation state with its own legal. So I think that was where the CWG backed away from trying to come up with it and then came out with, this is something that needs to be looked at later on. Thank you,
Martin. Okay, and I'll have to close the queue after Eberhard because I think we have to go on with, to the next subject.
It's incredibly tempting to re-litigating the work in the working group. The fact is this. This is about whether or not we, and it's an echo of what we talked about this morning, that we as CCTLD managers would want to give an opportunity to other GTLDs, ALAC, anybody, to have something to say about our business. And I don't think we do. There's an argument that we don't, as Alan seemed to think we did, have access to the IRP for delegation and redelegation. Somebody point to me where
ICANN, the corporation, anything in law to say about how I run my TLD, how he runs his TLD, or how anybody in this room runs their TLDs. ICANN is a corporation that was formed in 1999 or 2000, after we came into being. There's no legal path or even understanding of what it is that's being transferred. So how to guess at what the hell's going on is beyond me.
No, but now give me one phrase. What is this, okay or is it not okay? Because I know when ICANN was created and I know what we want, but we're now talking about this specific thing. Does it pass your scrutiny or does it have to be something else? Or do you want to wait for the
fundamental policy that we all accept, which is RFC 1591. In RFC 1591, there is something called the IDNB.
Yeah. Doesn't exist.
It would have to be called into being, such a call. And whether or not ICANN was the person you'd go to do that with is another matter, because at the moment it's the US government. The US government has supported authority for these delegations. Whether it has that in law in reality or not.
I'm going to cut you short.
Yep. No, but let me finish. I
think you've made your point. Your point is it should not be here and it's not there. That's good, and we should have a PDP afterwards to get this other thingy implemented, right? Thank you.
Okay. Olaf, please explain to me what I'm saying just now.
Beforehand or afterwards?
Preferably beforehand, then it's much shorter. Jordan, what Jordan said is important. It is wrong, but TLD members who are not a CCNSO members, and it only affects CCNSO members as long as they are CCNSO members. I don't like this. I just leave the CCNSO, and then on none of this... It's clearly so that only the CCNSO member are affected by ICANN policies. It's clearly in the bylaws, and what Martin says, it is clearly also not so that it says in the RFC 591 that the local community has a decision. We have had a large working group FOI that interpreted it. Basically, we have to serve the local community. That's what it says. That what everybody, even me, who registered .na before the RFC 1591 was registered. But to say that somebody who does this, that the local community, what, however it is defined, now decides what to do. No. In short, because of wants me to, I cannot live with anything where anybody takes action on my property. Cannot live it. The question is whether one should, maybe before one goes to the legal sense, exhaust the remedies inside the system is another question. We had cases in Namibia where cases were lost in court because the court says you may be right at what you do, but you didn't exhaust the system yet. So that's another question. I do not want to have an external entity to deal CCNSO issues at all. In particular, I do not want to have anybody to deal with my...
Okay, so in short, Eberhard is in favor of this. He's against the PDP afterwards. We'll deal with delegations and redelegations unless you can decide for yourself. That's... Yeah?
Now you have managed to confuse me.
That was the intention. Thank you very much. Okay, back to Byron, I think. Remember that one.
So just to get a flavor, a sense of the room on this, the independent review panel has a specific exclusion related to CCTLD delegations and revocations. It would appear to me from what I have heard and just watching the room that we are okay with that. We are satisfied with that. Is there any objection to that? Is there any objection to what you see here on the screen, which says specifically that independent review panel actions would, or decisions rather, would not apply to CCTLD delegations or redelegations. So we are okay with what is on the screen right now. No objections to that. I think one of the key issues is, assuming a proposal comes out and the ICANN community moves forward, there will be a window of time where we don't have policies in place because a PDP has not yet happened that would address these issues, and that there will be a window of time between the transition taking place and the successful resolution of a PDP at some point in the future. And we have to acknowledge that there is potentially a gap there where there is no guidance for the board, say. But there's no policy in place. Yes.
That's it. There's no.
That, none of that changes, but the difference is there's no NTIA to appeal to.
There's no formal specific system to correct the board if we have the impression that they're taking the wrong decision, apart from the powers that get through.
Apart from the powers.
The transition process, well, in which I think getting rid of the board might be a very effective way of dealing with this or firing a few of them. But yeah. On which, because I wanted the chair to close this whole thing. Is that okay?
And I do want to close it, but I also want to make sure that in closing it that yeah. our members on the CCWG also have a sense of where the room is.
Famous last words.
I really don't know where Patricia Boblete, for the transcript, I really don't know where this notion that the NTIA could be today's instance of appeal for revocations comes from. That's never happened, and I don't see any intention of the U.S. government to behave in such a role, even if it was the status quo.
I agree, but there's always been a
potential
for that there is an oversight function carried out by the NTIA, which will definitely be gone, and it will only be the board, and thus from when the transition happens until such time as we define our own PDP on these subjects, there will be nothing, nowhere to appeal an action taken by the board on this, other than the fact we have potentially the five new powers that we
just the reconsideration request process.
Right.
Byron, I'm going to give the mic to Keith. Oh, he has a mic.
Thank you. The NTIA have asserted that they will not enter into any decision relating to delegations and redelegations, and that their authorisation role is utterly restricted to ensuring that ICANN has followed the process and their authorisation is automatic at that point. They have, on the record through the FOI and the Delegation Redelegation Working Group, advocated that they would not ever be in the position of making a decision over another CCTLD. So I think that's quite cut and dried, that there isn't a mechanism now, and there never has been. There was contemplated B1 under RFC 1591, and it's up to us to do the PDP to create that. Thank you.
And there never was good guidance, and now there is. Work of the Framework of Interpretation Working Group, right?
Well, there's better guidance on some aspects, but there's still policy development processes, including what the appeals mechanism for delegations and revocations should look like.
Thank you.
And that's why I was urging yesterday that we as a community need to address those policies with urgency.
So thank you very much. I think to some degree we're probably in violent agreement, in that there is no particular meaningful change in a post-transition world in terms of the rights that we have, other than there will be the five new empowerment mechanisms that we would have at our disposal. And we have to acknowledge that, which is fundamentally what I was getting at. That is a situation we will be in from the time the transition happens to the time we complete a peak, which we generally acknowledge has to be done and will be done. And the community just has to be comfortable with that. Any objection to that? We understand that to be the position that we will be in and the requirement for us to do a follow-on PDP on these subjects. On to the next topic.
Okay. You introduce it? Shall I introduce it?
You introduce it.
So the next topic is the internal accountability of the existing SOs and ACs. With the introduction of those new powers that the community will get, there is also, we also started a discussion on, okay, but we increase the accountability of ICANN and give these powers to the constituencies. How do we also make sure that the constituencies are working in a transparent and an accountable way? And if I'm not mistaken, then Mathieu is going to give a short introduction on this subject.
Well, I think, Roloff, you've already provided the core introduction, and there's been a lot of concerns and discussions at some point where some, essentially in the technical community, expressed concerns about whether those ASO and ACs that we were empowering were actually acting for, really be held into account by the population, the people, the companies, the organizations they were designed to represent. And I think it was strong in the first public comment, stronger in the second. And so the group has designed this actually very literal but important proposal for the Workstream 1, and it's also Workstream 2 item. And as I have already spoken too much, I think it's best if Giovanni can introduce the proposal. It's only one sentence. It's in the Google Doc that you were looking at. If I can scroll down, you'll see bottom of the table, and Giovanni's going to explain what that's like. Well, I have the text if you want.
Yeah.
So the up.
To the previous text.
So. Go ahead, Giovanni.
Sorry. So regarding the SO and RC accountability, the proposed text review for the Workstream 1 is that future structural reviews will assess the system SO accountability. And therefore, most of the work regarding how to enhance the accountability of SO and ACs is postponed to the Workstream 2. And so this is the reasoning that we have followed at present. That said, I understand, and I don't know if we are meant to discuss it, but I would like to stop first on this point that the purpose is to have the structural review, including the accountability, let's say having structural reviews for the accountability of the SO and ACs at this stage. And then further accountability mechanism will be investigated in Workstream 2.
So if you can just, the idea is to plant a continuous improvement system on SOAC accountability that is a little bit stronger than it is now, where it's only for efficiency for purpose. You really clearly state that SOACs need to be accountable. And I think the CCNSO has done so much in terms of diversity, outreach, including the non-members into the decisions, that it's, that wouldn't be my first target in terms of improving.
Because a bit on the point that Eberhard was making, more than ever, it is important that the CCNSO also includes in its discussions the non-member. Byron.
And just for the benefit of the room, I do want to take one step back. The reason that SOAC accountability, heightened accountability, is so important is because with all of these new powers comes certain responsibilities and accountability ourselves. Each of these SOACs now has significantly more power to impact ICANN, the organization, and the broader community as a result. So we must all make sure that each of those SO and ACs is also more accountable, perhaps, than they are today. Hence the requirement for this.
Okay. Anybody in the room who has a question on this? Either clarification, follow-up? Anybody who has a strong objection against this particular raising? It's the bottom line one.
Yes.
SOAC accountability.
So the future structural reviews that are conducted under board supervision on a regular basis, I think it's 3 to 5 years, will assess CCNSO accountability, while currently they only assess CCNSO efficiency for purpose. They will, in addition to efficiency for purpose, they will look into accountability.
Yeah.
Again, it will be very important to interact with the accountability working group during the Workstream 2 phase, so in the future, after we deliver the final proposal at this stage, because that is the moment when the accountability mechanism, how to announce them, what kind of mechanism are going to be discussed within the group. So that is going to be crucial for this community to interact a lot with the accountability working group for Workstream 2.
Thank you, Giovanni, for volunteering for this work.
Okay. So, I repeat my question. Are there any strong objections to this particular phrasing? Change in the region?
Nope.
Okay. I think we have a full... Now, moving on. The third subject. I think as most of you will have heard at any particular phase, is that the CWG transferred some of the things that they came up with as conditions to the work of the CCWG. And what we're going to discuss now is the question, have those conditions been met? So we're not talking about the conditions of the NTIA yet. This is about the work of the CWG coming up with certain conditions that were for the CCWG to resolve. And Lise is going to explain to us in more detail what this is about.
Well, yes, and I had a slide for this. When we started working as the CWG on the IANA stewardship transition, we actually realized that there were issues that would be not efficient if we took care of, because it was dealt with in the accountability group. But in order to have those, to have this linkage, we made our proposal conditional on that the accountability group would meet those requirements that we set. And you can see on this slide, it's six areas. One is the ICANN budget. Another one is the ability to recall the board. Number three is the IANA function review. Four is a customer standing committee. Five is the appeal mechanism where we want it. And that was what Becky actually talked about earlier. And the last was that we needed to have some of our requirements into fundamental bylaws. And if I go quickly through each of them, only superficial, but the ICANN budget was a request for an ability to veto the I budget. We needed this possibility if there was not, if IANA didn't get enough funding or it was...
PTI is in post-transition IANA.
Yes, sorry. If the new IANA was not getting enough funding or the funding was used in a way that was not with the focus on the actual core business, et cetera. So, and that's actually, as it looks now, in the proposal. The ICANN board is also something that's been touched upon earlier, and it also looks like that's being dealt with. Regarding the IANA function review and the customer standing committee, our group is actually working on drafting those bylaws with the lawyers. So these requirements are being taken care of within the CWG, but it's still going to be a part of bylaw set that the accountability group is going to put forward. And then we have the appeal mechanism where it has also been incorporated. As Becky said, there was the IANA decisions or non-decisions that could be appealed to the independent appeal panel, review panel, sorry. And then we also have the question. The question has been regarding the revocation or of the CCTLDs, and this has been left out to be not. It's not included in the proposal, and that was actually because we made a small questionnaire and asked the community if they wanted to have this included, and the answer was no. So all in all, I think most things are already in the proposal, and what's not there, I am surely confident will be there. What's not completely clear yet is the actual enforceability of some of our requests or requirements. But I'm certain that both models that who has been talking about can accommodate the enforceability that we need.
And just to make that clear, if you say enforceability, you mean legal enforceability. So it can be a power, it can be in the bylaws, it can be agreed upon, it can be in the proposal, but then if the board still doesn't do what it has promised to do, we can take the board to court and get that particular issue resolved by a judge and enforced on the board, right?
Yes. Yeah. But it's also that you can build in some of the enforceability in the actual bylaws, but you can build in the process, so it becomes very clear what they should have done, the board. But yeah. I agree, it's a legal. Okay.
Any questions in the room before I check if there's anything in the panel? Are you all still there? Okay. I don't believe you. Anybody in the panel who wants to comment on this? So the short version is Lisa says, we're doing fine. Okay. Anybody who has strong objections to the notion that on this particular subject, the CCWG is doing fine? Well, Mathieu, you have consensus. You were gone. You said, that's why I said I don't believe you. So you would prefer we're doing what we can. Anyway, I think it's still quite a powerful consensus here. Now, we have some kind of a small problem because for the next subject, we were going to have Mike and Chris, and they're not here. So maybe I can negotiate with the chair that we... Who? Chris, 15. So shall we skip this one, do the next one, and then...
I think there's some irony in skipping this and moving straight to the next topic, which is the removal of individual board members.
All right.
Yeah. So this might not be the right moment to
Or maybe we should do it without Chris and Mike in the room, right? Yes, let's do that. We will move on from the models, which we absolutely must cover because it's essential, but we will skip ahead for the moment to the removal of individual board members and community budget veto, for which we have about 10 minutes for.
Yeah, okay. Mature. We're going to introduce the subject of removal of an individual board member. Are you also going to touch on this thing that was discussed, that if you remove enough board members individually, you can also
remove the whole board? On to that level of detail if what you like.
I don't know. If that's too much of a detail, we'll skip it.
I think it's a little bit of a deal because it's going to be one of the... protection measures that we'll set up, but I think the core of the discussion of board member removal is captured in one of the slides was on Jordan's initial presentation, if we can move back to this. But basically, the concept is there's a CWG requirement, and there was agreement very initially on this, on the CCWG, that having the ability to remove individual board directors was a specific community power that was necessary to enhance ICANN's accountability. There has been a lot of discussion about this, and we've only found a consensus position within the CCWG on Friday, basically, on how to do that. Why has there been a lot of discussion? Because on the one side, the CCNSO appoints board directors, and we want them to be accountable to us. But on the other side, and that was well expressed yesterday in the discussion with Mike and Chris, and I think they have had their say already. Oh, Chris, welcome. We're discussing the board removal.
Yes, you have come just in time, because I was just going to check if we have consensus on the notion to move to remove our individual board member on the documented reason for coming too late in the crucial discussion on the IANA stewardship decision. I think the most important discussion we've had since the creation of the CCNSO for that matter. But
so, on the one hand, let me recap. On the one hand, there is a view that the appointing SO or AC, because ALAC appoints a board member, should be the one to decide whether or not to remove. Because after all, we seat them, we should unseat them. On the other side,
board members are not only serving a particular community, they join a board, and the board is the board of the corporation, and through collegial decisions, they are here to serve the purpose of the organization. Note that I'm not speaking about serving the corporation, I'm speaking about serving the purpose. It's a completely different thing, although they obviously overlap a lot. So there's no contradiction, per se, between being appointed by the CCNSO and serving ICANN as a corporation and its purpose. Because we are part of ICANN because we have overlapping interests. We want ICANN. We want ICANN to maintain the IANA function as performing and so on. We want ICANN to make sure that the policy scope of the CCNSO is what we want it to be and no more. And that's perfectly clear. Those two views about how to remove a board director have tried to be combined. We've tried to combine them. And I'm running time before we can move to the process. Have you got the slides from Jordan? No? The ones you shared this morning? They are available too. Because there's been a discussion about how to best do that. And it would be probably clearer, and I'm conscious.
Is it clear which slides you are referring to, Mathieu?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, physical removal, bodyguards come, and just remove. We have usually rivers close to the convention centers. That's not looking like slides. All right. Can we go to the next slide? Next. That was... Next again, again, and again. That's it. I'm supposed to do it, but you're... So the key is, this is for Chris or Mike, so the CCNSO appointed members. There would be, the CCNSO would say, we want to initiate a process through a council resolution upon regular council decision-making. That would trigger a discussion of the whole community through this community forum so that the CCNSO, but also the board director, have the ability to discuss the matter and explain their views. Then the CCNSO would collect comments from all parts of the community. Maybe the GAC would say, no, we want to keep Chris. And the GNSO would say, we're fully with you.
Make it an unknown individual.
All right. And only after this phase could the CCNSO be entitled to make a decision about the removal of this particular board member on a 75% threshold of decision, so a supermajority type of decision. So that's the balance that's been found, where it's still the last word for the appointing body, but this appointing body has to go public, exchange, discuss about the reasons for that, listen to the input before it comes to a supermajority. That's the intent. The minutiae of the process might be tweaked, but I think what matters is whether we are globally in agreement with this intent.
Maybe something is, I don't know, the first bit, Mathieu, because I think it's not a council decision. There has to be a simple majority within the ESO or the AC to kick off the process towards the community forum, I think.
Well, I think we're not prescribing anything on the decision process from the ESO or AC, because it's a subsidiary thing, and obviously in the GAC it's not working the same as, the GAC doesn't have a say on here, but within ALAC or GNSO it doesn't work the same as the CCNSO.
Okay.
There are stakeholder groups and things like this.
That was it? Yeah.
That to me, that's the highlights are here. And
Chris?
I sent an email to the members list and the council list, which sets out a slightly more detailed step-by-step version of it, which is what the accountability CCWG coalesced around the other day. So it just goes into a little bit more detail than Mathieu used. So it might be helpful to see that. But basically, everything that Mathieu said is right.
So, in short, in the current proposal, for the removal of a particular director of ICANN. It is the community that, or the constituency that appointed or elected the director that starts the process. It has to move into full community process, and in the end, it is still that particular constituency that takes the decision. That's the proposed approach. Anybody from the panel wants to that? Or we move to checking the room? Do we have any violent objections to this proposal? None at all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And now, given that Chris is here, we will move back to the subject of he will be a panelist, and that is on the potential models and mechanisms, more commonly known as the sole member model or the sole designator model. And Jordan is going to kick that off and describe it to us, set the stage, and then we have a panel discussion with Chris and Jordan and Becky.
And I think here, particularly the danger of getting too much into the details is looming. So I'll ask both the panelists and the people in the room, if you have a question, let's try to keep it at the most important aspects of these proposals and not go too much into details. We get bogged down if we're not careful. Jordan.
Hi.
Jordan was going to do the introduction.
Hi. Sorry, that's a New Zealand political joke for people who don't know and you don't want to. It's terrible. So I think the topic, you could tell it was terrible. I think the topic, am I just doing the model or decision-making as well? Do you want them together or separately? Or you don't?
And decision-making, the model and decision-making.
And my job is to introduce and present this.
That's correct.
Right, okay. So the bad news is that the slides that explain this are only partly in that pack, but we can start with them, and I can send you guys the ones I just finished that help explain the rest of it. So if you scroll up in this pack, up, down.
Sideways.
Yes.
Scroll sideways.
So this is a nice summary slide to start on in terms of the decision making. Off to the left is the engagement process, the normal discussion of ICANN work, which didn't make it onto this slide. And for the decision, the kind of decision-making in this model, we're coming down to a point of very narrow disagreement is why I'm starting like this. All of these steps here are steps that will be available in all of these models. So there's someone can raise the desire to use one of the community powers. There's a pre-call to discuss that. If it's seen as a serious problem that needs to be fixed, community forum we talked about will get together and have a discussion. After that, the SOs and the ACs acting by their normal processes. We all know how the CCNSO makes decisions, will decide whether to add their voice to exercising a community power or not. And then the board has to respond to that. There might be a further resolution step. If the community feels like the board isn't following the bylaws, there can be the use of the IRP. And in the end, at the end of many, many steps of disagreement and attempts at resolution, there's the enforcement line that's on the right there, which involves potentially court action. But that's not where I want to start, if you like. On the model, that stuff is all pretty similar. And to be at the core of this, the community needs to be organized in some way. There needs to be a decision-making process, and that needs to be in some kind of vehicle. And what we've heard from the community,
Jordan,
is...
Sorry to interrupt. And you mean not the decision-making within the SO or the AC, but the decision-making between the SOs and the ACs.
So it's almost like a vote-counting mechanism, a decision aggregation mechanism. It pulls the decisions that we make in our SOs and ACs together to test whether the relevant threshold to exercise a power or not has been reached. And so there needs to be something to do that. And that's what the CCWG has called a community mechanism. And it's been called that a number of times. Bart, I'm just going to send you the updated slides. I'm sorry, I realize that it isn't ideal to be doing these things at the same time. But if I don't do it now, I'll never do it, and then you won't have the slides. Now, so it's a community mechanism, and it's not another body, it's not another committee, it's not another group of people. It's just counting the decisions that the SOs and ACs have made. And we heard you on that. That was big feedback from the first draft proposal, significant improvement in the second draft. But there are two versions of this floating around. One of them is the community mechanism as sole member, and that's what was in the second draft proposal. And that's what got a fair amount of positive feedback, but some important and persistent negative feedback on a few issues. The other one is the community mechanism as sole designator. And you'll get a slide up in a little while that repeats this stuff. So if I'm going too quickly or you want to read it later, that is on the way. And there are some important differences between designators and members. Now, Kimberly, do you have that new slide? Has it arrived with you yet? If it hasn't, can you scroll through this? Can you scroll down a couple of slides? I want to talk about the sole bit first, and then about the designator versus member. So down, I don't even know if it's down or up. Do you know? That one, perfect, perfect. So back in May or whenever it was, the first draft proposal said each SO and AC will be a member, be a designator as well. And we heard lots of concerns about that. The member, that you'd have to turn each of us into a thing called an unincorporated association. People are like, what's that? How do we keep it under control? How is it accountable to the SO and AC? So a lot of these issues came up and were raised as concerns. So in developing the second draft proposal, what the sole means is that there's just one legal vehicle here through which these powers are exercised and added up. And that meant that the CCMSO doesn't have to turn itself into a corporation or an unincorporated association. Importantly, it meant that if the GAC is going to have any role, it isn't going to be demanding governments to join something, which they did be, they're very clear they're allergic to. So the sole does not mean our right as a CCNSO to make decisions about our directors gets taken away from us and given to the community. It doesn't mean that the decision-making goes away out of the SOs and ACs and goes into some committee of the great and the good. So I'm saying that because that some people say that that's what they get when they hear this word sole member or sole designator. So I just want you to be clear that that is not the case. Think of it as the legal packaging around the exercise of these community powers. That's all it is. Now, if you do have those new slides available, you might not, might be because I didn't push send. I can keep talking and you'll be able to review them afterwards, 3 minutes ago or so. It's the email server, the ICANN email server. Anyway.
Jordan, while we're waiting for those slides to come up, when you say a sole member or a sole designator, in fact, it's a kind of a very transparent box that you put around the whole of the community, isn't it? And the only reason why we have to put that around that whole community is to make it into a legal entity. And the only reason why we need that is that and then enforce, legally enforce, those powers, because you need a legal entity to take the ICANN.
Exactly. And one thing that entity can be is a party that has standing to be part of the IRP. And the other thing is that if it needs to become even more draconian to go to court, it's a thing that can go to court. It's an object that can go to court. And it's undoubted. You know it's there. It'll be in the ICANN bylaws. There'll be no confusion or uncertainty. And remember, we want as little confusion or uncertainty as possible on this.
I stress that because it also makes clear that the only reason when we formally need this sole designator or sole member is when we go to court, which, if all goes well, will never
in
be
in the case
necessary.
Of the designator, well, in both cases, actually. Both cases is, in effect, the enforcer. It is the thing that does the enforcing. It's the thing that gives you the standing to bring the action, be it in arbitration or be it in court. And it has the personality, the personhood, to be able to sue. So it is just and solely and only the enforcer.
Yep.
So, designator member, this is apparently the elephant in some people's living rooms. Still no slides? No. Okay, I can't Skype them to you. I'll email them to Chris and he can put them on a stick.
Can we not hook up your laptop to the...
I don't know. Okay. If you've got a memory stick, I can... Good. So, member and designator, what are these things? These are legal terms in California. They're roles given to this mechanism. And a designator, if it's a designator, it has two powers. It can appoint a director to a board, and it can remove a director to a board. And that's very, very clear that this body has that power. And that's the only directly clear power that it has in the law. A member has that power and some other powers. So, isn't it? It has
I'm going to come back to this again.
Yep.
Just to make sure that the room gets this. When you say it's the only power it has, do you mean it's the only power it can legally enforce?
Yes.
I hear a yes, and I hear a no.
It's
a very fine distinction, but it is only, it's the only rights it has unless you give it other ones.
Okay, but so we can put all the powers in the bylaws.
Correct.
So we can give the powers to both models, but the only power that we can actually legally enforce with the designated model is the power to remove directly.
Unless you give it some other ones, in which case you could legally enforce them too.
So a member has a large range of powers, and you may be able to limit some of those in the bylaws, though it's unclear if you actually can. So the member has all powers. Designator is born with two powers, appoint and remove. However, it is clear that you can give them some additional powers in terms of the bylaws. The question is, what powers can be given by bylaws, and is that sufficient? And that's a more detailed answer. But they're born with one powers, but they can be given additional ones.
Clear enough, I think.
The reason I'm umming is because we're getting into issues of serious tension and disagreement between lawyers, among other things. So I'm trying to stay as far away from those things as I can.
We won't go any deeper than this.
Yeah,
I think this is enough.
So all of the powers that we've talked about will be put in the bylaws. ICANN is obliged either way to follow the bylaws. The board has to follow the bylaws. If the company isn't following the bylaws, you can take an independent dispute to deal with them. So understand that in the distinction between these two models, we're talking about the ends of the end of the end of the end of a process. To me, as a participant, that's why which one we choose has gotten to the point of being a little bit academic. Are you on the new slides? You are. So keep going down. So we've stepped through that already, and then I've explained that we need a personality and there's member or designator. Keep going down. We've talked about the difference between sole and multiples. And so So if we call this thing a designator, then in the law, as discussed... No, stop. Yeah. It has the power to do the director removal. The member has that power as well and a set of other rights. So for all of those five community powers we talked about before, the budget power, the fundamental bylaws approval, the rejection of standard bylaws changes, it has those powers inherently in itself and can be given them under the bylaws, and no one can question them. If it makes a decision along those lines, the board has to do it. The designator model can be given those powers in the bylaws, and the board has to follow the bylaws, but if it tried to test them in court just on its own authority, it would be in a weaker. So that's the critical difference here. One thing to take in mind, of course, is that to get anything resolved in the courts, which is where these differences apply, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. We're not talking about a speedy process. So that's all I can actually say in terms of the model. This is a new set of just descriptions. I'd ask Matthew, who's been as the co-chair as horribly and deeply buried in this as I have, to say if I've missed any point about the model. We haven't talked about the decision-making process very much yet.
No, I think about the model, you've captured it. It's really a small legal difference. We're very much deep into the weeds of how it is implemented. The only point is to capture the feedback we've had on the sole member model, which was the one that was present in the second report, was that within the set of other rights of a member, some were not part of the requirements of the CCWG, such as the right to initiate a bylaw change for the member or the right to initiate derivative actions against the board as a whole, against the company. And those were flagged as concerns, although It's been further analyzed, and it was part of the report. They could have been constrained by very strong consensus rules. That has been the concern that has been received about the member all member model.
Or to put it another way, with the member, you have to tie its hands in some ways, and there's a bit of uncertainty about how strong the rope could be. Because there are some things it would have the right to do that you don't want it to do. With the designator, you have to beef it up a bit. You have to strengthen a few things around the edges, and there's a little bit of uncertainty about that strengthening.
We're running out of time, more or less, so is it okay if we now go to the room, ask if this is clear, then you explain a bit more how process runs, because that, and then we test the room for model and process, or process and model. Is that okay? Because I think, am I correct that the CCWG is moving towards sole designator model, moving away from sole member model?
Well, that might be your sense of the room, but it hasn't been confirmed
yet.
Well,
it was a question. I wasn't suggesting anything.
There was certainly some traction on the mailing list and within some of the discussions that the co-chairs we had with the various constituencies yesterday. It hasn't been confirmed by the CCWG. Okay. That's on our agenda later today.
So do you want us to test the room on both models or on...
I think what would be most appropriate would be whether there are any strong objections to any of the models.
Okay. First of all, are there any... Is that a question or... Okay. I saw a hand. That's why I asked, is it a question?
No, it really is a question. I'm really keen to understand whether everybody in the room who's going to be asked for their opinion understands the difference between the two mechanisms you're proposing, as in whether or not you want to be a designator or a sole designator or a sole member. How many people really understand this? Because I'm sure that half the CCWG don't.
Yeah, I understand what you, more or less what you mean, but...
Well, let's ask the question.
Yeah, but try to qualify or quantify that. Really understand?
All right, understand it. The word really.
Okay, I'll do the other way around if you permit me. Is there anybody who doesn't understand what this has been about and who doesn't understand the most important difference between the models?
For me, that's actually not the question. Even if I understand what the difference is here, will it have the two different models on us in the end? That would I like to know more about before any of them.
Thank you. Can I try that one?
Yeah, but can I take the other question first?
Sure. Yeah, I wasn't going to. Not a question. I need
anybody who objects to that?
I think what we need is this is still a work in progress. This particular bit. And what we need to know is do we think you are going down entirely the wrong track? And if otherwise, it is a please carry on and you resolve this for us and come back and tell us what you think is the best and the way to... For us to direct you down into the weeds about which one of these is entirely...
Yeah.
Jake, can I disagree with you? You know, I can understand if you don't want to debate finer detail of bylaw discussions, but I really think this is a pretty fundamental issue. And if you say, no, we'll just give you the mandate, I'm sorry, there are a lot of people on the CCWG who claim mandates without clear direction from their constituencies. And I really think that in deference to those people from the CCNSO who are involved in those discussions, if they're going to go in there, let's give them a clear mandate as to what is or isn't acceptable, because I have a particular view. But if they want to compromise, for example, on sole designator, and this community doesn't think it's acceptable and it insists that the rights attributed to member are required, then they at least deserve that mandate before going into the room. And similarly, if this community feels that the member has potential unintended consequences and they should not push for it, let's give that instruction as well, but let's not go through wishy-washy. No, they'll represent us well enough.
Maybe just for the record, that statement on members or participants or people in the CCWG, I think that was an opinion on the fact.
Yes,
somebody was going to answer...
We can try and answer Annabeth's question.
Annabeth's question. Chris.
So look, Annabeth, the answer is to some extent that one's... that can argue both ways, right? So I can make an argument as a lawyer. I can make an argument in favour of the membership model, and I can make an argument in favour of the designator model. Attraction of the membership model to most of us is that a lot of us understand what membership-based organisations are about. And the designator is a new thing for us, right? But My problem with the membership model, and I do, is that it's the thing that the last line there that says a set of other rights. The challenge with that is that there is a right to wind the corporation up. There's a right to sue the corporation. There's a right to demand documentation, all documentation. There are a number of those. It is possible for those to be. It's possible that you can stop those from happening, but there's no clarity around it, whether you actually can or you can't. Some of them you know you can, some of them you don't. So I would rather go for the designator and build up than go for the member and trying to knock out, because these are statutory rights. In other words, they are rights at law. Very difficult to be sure that you can't fight in court. If you say you don't have that right, you then might end up in court arguing that they do in fact have that right. That's just my personal view, as a CCTLD manager and speaking as somebody who runs a membership organisation. But I view it slightly differently because the way that ICANN is structured. That's just my view.
Hey, Lloyd.
Mike, you just said that this audit plenum today gave a mandate to the members of the CCWG. Would you feel the same with regards to the CCNSO appointed members to the board?
Sorry, I was suggesting exactly that.
Do I understand you that you are willing to accept instructions from the CCNSO as with regards your membership and decision-making process on the board?
Yes, absolutely. As I expressed yesterday, I'm more than happy to carry instructions from my community. When it comes to voting, I'll vote my conscience, but I'm more than happy to carry instructions.
Jordan,
since
we don't vote on the CCWG, I am more than willing to carry instructions, but as far as consensus calls, I will go with my conscience then.
Okay, but let's get back to the subject. Interesting discussion,
but whatever. I think that Chris has brought some of the very core disputes at the heart of this project into the room. And I have, as some of you may have detected from time to time, a slightly different view from Chris on some of this. But in the end, I have a strong preference personally for the membership model. But my recommendation to the CCWG today will be that we go for the designator model. And the reason for that is not about which one is better. I think that's utterly obvious. It's the membership one, in my opinion, for a wide range of reasons. But we are tasked with making the least possible change and the least disruption in pursuit of going down the track of a consensus. And it's a consensus process that we're in here, and we developed a set of requirements in the CCWG. This is about what can fulfill the requirements. And as should be obvious from what I said to you before, I think that the differences between these models in substance, about what they can do in court at the end of these processes, are so remote and so arcane that I'm willing to give away the improved prospects I see with membership in order to get to the consensus that might emerge around the sole designator model. So.
You're done? Okay. Stephen and Jörg. Okay, we'll do Jörg first and then...
All right. I think I understand what Chris's fears are with respect to the set of other rights in the membership model. And I would like to ask what we would not get, or what we fear we would not get by the designator model. So what is missing?
Okay, but maybe I can make that question a bit more specific, because the CCWG formulated criteria. So can we say, can I rephrase your question into which criteria will not be met instead of, because we can all think up things that we'll be missing, but the question is, are they really relevant? And the criteria were the things that we had to tick off for this accountability thing to become on the level that we think is necessary. Is that okay?
More or less, yeah, because I think for me they are right to the point.
Okay.
It's just so minimal. Yeah. The question is that just enough?
So really briefly, with the designator, you can. So we're talking about the five community powers that we set out in our report, which is what we're trying to give.
The criteria.
Give criteria to. You can involve the designator in binding roles and changing the bylaws. So the fundamental bylaws and the standard bylaws powers are guaranteed, and the removal of directors and the removal of the whole board are guaranteed. In the case of the budget, strategic plan, operating plan, a member has right to make binding decisions about those. If you don't have a member, if you have a designator, only the board can make final decisions about those things. But in both cases, either case, the board is obliged to follow a process set in the bylaws to arrive at these things. So if you choose designator, you don't get the statutory right to enforce a decision from the member about budget, and you don't get the statutory financial transparency stuff and a range of other things that a member comes with that the CCWG never discussed and said that it needed. Yeah. Okay. Some members of the group really want them. They aren't arising out of the community requirements process that led us to this point.
Okay, thank you, Jordan. Stephen.
Thank you. Stephen Deerhake for the record. There's something really curious going on here because for months it's been the drumbeat of the member model, the single member model, over and over again on the list, certainly through the face-to-face in Los Angeles. And suddenly here in the 12th hour, it seems the designator model is coming from way far behind and will in fact cross the finish line before the single member model. And my question is, why is this happening? Is this because perhaps the board has indicated off-list they're willing to live with the designator model, or is it because Jones Day may have given it their blessing along the lines? I just find this really curious.
So this is not a comfortable discussion necessarily, but that's fine. In LA, the board said it would not accept a single member model. Shortly after LA, the board said it wouldn't accept a designator model either. Early this week, a clarification of the board's position based on new information and analysis was made.
That's known as a change of position.
Change? I was being nicer than that. You weren't expecting that, were you?
You were being so diplomatic.
Was made, and the designated model was back on the table. And for me, based on the hundreds of hours of time and analysis I put into this, one of those two models was necessary. So I was in despair about this process when the board said the only two options that provides some enforceability are off the table. It was a terrible thing to have done. It was undone. That's a great thing. So we can move on.
Also, Stephen, I don't know whether you know or not, but at large, passed a resolution on whatever day, Monday, Sunday, saying that their current position is that they won't buy into the member model. So that's also caused a.
But I think it also took some time to get a legal position
correct.
On this.
Correct. Absolutely.
Because it was
correct.
Not only us fighting with the board and the board fighting with us, but it was also the legal
actually,
teams fighting with each other.
And the CCWG.
The only thing they shared was their bills, but.
That's right.
The CCWG session on Monday.
All of the build up, all of them.
Monday.
Friday.
There was a long, tedious debate and question and answers with the lawyers, and that kept the information developing and cooking. And that was where I concluded what I just told you before, that the designated model would work. So I didn't have all the information I needed to get to that position until Monday.
And I think that's also true for the board. I think that the original saying no to the designator model was based on information that basically wasn't... It's not that it was incorrect, it's just it was incomplete and there was a misunderstanding about what the designator model would end up doing. So I think we've actually all come, for all sorts of different reasons, we've all come to pretty much the same place eventually.
Okay. Yeah, you have a question?
Thank you. I have a question about the timetable implication of this choice. Because I understand that the designator model is closer to the consensus than the sole member, but the sole member was the main proposal done by CCWG during the last call for comments. So it looks like if we go to
another model,
delay the process. It will take more time. So I just want to recall that.
Okay.
I don't have
good
anything
question.
Against one or the
Let
other
Let me ask
model.
The panel, do we deal with that now or do we deal with it at the end? Because I think we have something on...
Let's deal it at the end. But we do it right first
and
Stephen, then fast.
You're happy with the answers? It was a good question. I think it was good to create some clarity on what happened.
I just want to follow up on Jordan's comment because I, too, have been a strong supporter of the single-member model. And I continue to prefer that over this, and I'll tell you the reason why. As Mary got up and asked this question, ultimately the enforcement at the sole designator model comes back to the ability to recall the board. I sometimes worry that that is too big a stick for the community to lift. And that was what was compelling my support for the single member model. I think that partly because of all of the processes that we have put into place, I think that we have enhanced the sort of moral suasion that will go into having the board come and the community come together, and so making that use of that stick less necessary. And that is why I am also prepared to go with the sole designator, although I do think from a legal simplicity model, actually the membership model is easier.
We do write to history. We started with the multiple member model, then we moved to the multiple designator model. We went then for the single member model. We had something unclear in between, which we can't even recall what it was called. And now we are at the next, ICANN's next top model, I think. So are we ready to sense the room for, are there any strong objections to against any of these two models?
Okay.
Thank you. Well done. You must have been extremely clear. Nobody completely puzzled? Oh, no, that was not a wise question to ask, I think. Forget that one.
So just to be clear, there are no strong objections from the room on either model.
Is that a strong objection, Annabeth? No, then we will deal with the question first. Then I'll get back to you on... So the answer is no. In fact, there is full consensus on... anyway, there are no strong objections. Annabeth, there are no objections.
Sorry, that's not right. Yes.
Gebhardt's.
I have an objection to the membership model. I did actually. I put my hand up. It went up with my arm. And Eberhard has his hand up. Eberhard, I suspect, objects to everything.
Annabeth Langier, here again. I think that the question is more: do we have a preference for one of them, even if you don't object really hard? So we try to find a way to go forward here and to have a consensus. So we try to do that. That does not mean that we wouldn't prefer one of the models if we could have the choice. And if I had got this right, if I understand the difference right here, is that if we choose the designator, give them one power, right, and to appoint and remove. And as a member model, they have that power. And as you say, a set of other rights. But here it on the screen it says right to appoint and remove.
That's the only right they have.
Both of them have that power.
That's correct.
Yeah. And in addition, a membership model will have a lot of other powers as well. So we can, if we choose the designated model, you can take it gradually. We give them the first power through this process, and then we always get something new into the bylaws later. Is that
not quite. Not Remember quite. That we're talking about the enforcement stage right at the end of the process. So whichever model we choose, the budget power, the bylaws powers, the director powers will still be there. The separation review will still be there. The IRP will still be there. It's only if right at the very end of the chain there needs to be legal action to enforce one of those powers. Designator, no argument. Appointment removal, 100% guaranteed. Member, all of them, 100% guaranteed. So it's
actually that's right. Or arbitration.
Absolutely.
Or arbitration. But the point, or the arbitration. My point simply, Annabeth, was that, and with the member model, there's some other powers as well, which I find troubling, which is why I don't want to have the member model.
So I'm sorry, Annabeth, but I'm not going to rephrase the first question. So it will. But I'm going to ask it again, but it's going to be the same question. Are there any strong objections against any of the two models?
A few. I need to talk something before you ask the question.
Oh, you want some clarification then?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
I don't particularly care either way. I care a little bit about the process that is being used. If I had been the board and I didn't want a member model and I wanted something in between, I would have said, I don't want a member model, I don't want the designator model, and then let them negotiate me back exactly what happened. That's not really a big drama for me, because negotiations, and I have a little bit of admiration for that. What I'm really upset about is about the method the ELEC deal, how the ELEC deals with this. Their chair and their members voting for one, and then the same people, 5 minutes later, voting against it. I don't know how we can deal with any of this when what the people in the group are in no way reliable. They say yes and mean no. They say no, they mean yes. I don't know how this is supposed to work. And how can we go now to a particular model when we don't know what their motivation for their sudden change of mind is?
Well, Eberhard, I don't think that we can really influence the way any other of the SOs or ACs is working. Let's set the floor. We do it the way it should be done.
Nigel. Okay, well, can I just... my turn. At last. Can I just suggest, before I say what I want to say, that Brian not get into this thing where the chair is making as much of intervention as the people from the floor. You've done a good job in chairing this, but you're as a member, you are engaging in the process through the
I'm not chair. The chair. Byron is the chair.
Well, okay.
Does it help?
Moderator, if you wish to prefer, but there you go. Okay. So, irrespective of what Eberhard said about good negotiation, it's pretty clear what's happened here, and it's and the reason for the last-minute change of heart is the opposition by the board and withdrawing to a position that enhances their position. We have here designator, right to appoint and remove directors. That's it. We have right and appoint to remove directors and a set of other rights. But that doesn't matter until we might go to court 5 years later. It's not the case, because, as you know, those of you who run membership model organisations, if you have the power there, a threat to use it, in the background, people will behave more correctly and they'll behave differently. So the situation is this, is that the rights that you're giving up by not insisting on the membership model, in the text, even this morning, you put up on the board today something about being asked us to approve single member model, and then that saw it. I saw you take it out, so I saw you edit it. We must know that we are giving up the right to financial transparency. Those are the rights that I hear that belong to the member that we're going to be giving up. So,
Nigel, it's good that you point this out. Once again, the CCWG deliberations on that matter are not over. They're not complete. We have a follow-up session. We have a follow-up session where transparency, on Monday I said, we haven't looked at all the criteria, we haven't been discussing the differences on transparency, and it's still very much possible that we actually tweak, as Chris was saying, one or the other of the models to increase one parameter in one or another. And maybe this transparency issue will come up. I would be very surprised if it did not come up, because some have been very vocal about it, and that the right of inspect the corporate records, for instance, is something that maybe can be provided in a designated model if we put it into the bylaws. So I think we're working on something that is still in progress. There is serious documentation being underway in the CCWG. It is something that we are taking on the basis of the comments we've received, but also a thorough analysis of what are the real and concrete differences, because it's not about a power struggle. It's about looking at the facts and the requirements and indeed the difference between the two in terms of level of enforcement is very, very small. And some of the differences can be breached, so I'm confident we can find something that everybody can live with. But once again, we're in a consensus-building environment. It's not about the best approach. It's about the approach everybody can live with.
What I'm hearing in that case is that the mood music is going flipped from being the membership model that was so much on the table only 2 or 3 weeks ago in Santa Monica, where I was, and has flipped to be the designated model in a couple of weeks. And the mood music is, because it's possible, it's what the board will accept. You can choose that, but so knowing that we're giving up the rights, whatever they are...
Nigel, you're rewriting the history, and we don't care about the history. It's about what we need for the future of ICANN.
If you mean 2 weeks, then I'm rewriting 2 weeks.
This is not a content, Nigel, but I'm just failing to understand why, if you stick with something for even 5 years, and at a certain point you come to the conclusion this won't work, are you then going to say, but we've been on this for 5 years, let's continue another 5 years? I mean, it's always...
Are you asking me a question?
No, I'm not, in fact.
Okay, thank you.
Jordan.
You know, I see where you're coming from in one sense. The only thing I want to say is that, you know, there's been a lot of pressure applied in this process. I don't particularly like that. But you, no matter how much pressure had been applied to me personally, if I thought the designated model wouldn't work, I would say so. And I would stick with that, and I would fight to the bitter end. But I don't, and so there is a complication. If we're changing the model, it does have some consequences for the timeline and the need for public comment, and that is a downside. But it wasn't me who made the situation happen that was what we had to do. So, you know, we're all responsible for the decisions that we make. What I'm saying to you is that the single designated model can do what we need it to do. And no matter what it looks like, no matter what happens in getting to that point, I was at that point intellectually before, we have to do what we need to do to get the minimum requirements through. And if both models do it, and if one is a real stick in the throat...
I need to respond to Nigel.
The final one, because
I have to. Because, I apologize, Rolf, I understand. But
are you
important.
Going to clarify something?
I'm going to respond specifically to Nigel, because I want to make it very, very clear that I have at no point in this process done anything, supported any model or said anything that don't believe is in the best interest of the CCTLDs. And so when you say it's changed because the board said so, or the board did this or the board did that, maybe. But from my personal point of view, not once have I ever said anything that I believe was the best thing for CCTLDs, and I continue to say that. So I just have to respond for that reason. Thank you.
Okay. Now, final exercise on this subject. I'm going to ask two questions, one on the designated model and one on the single member model. Can those people who have a preference for the sole designated model, on the information that has been given now, and I understand that's not the details, not everything, but just your feeling, those who have a preference for the sole designated model, raise your green card. Both cards will be green. I see one vote that I cannot count. Okay. Sole designated model. Okay, and those who have preference for the sole member model, show a green card. Slightly less, but not a lot. Okay, thank you. Shall we move to the next subject before a very, very... Sorry? I didn't want to count them because it would give the impression that we are voting, but there's less. Okay. Yeah.
Well, just to be clear... We were taking a temperature for the room. We weren't voting. But I would say there was substantively more for sole designator than sole member. And I'm sure...
There is no consensus. Then you must otherwise you must count them.
I didn't say there was a consensus. I said what was shown was materially more supportive of the sole designator than the sole member. That's all I said.
Okay.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Very constructive contribution.
Yeah, thank you very much. So I, as the chair of this session, I'm sorry, Jay, we have spent a significant amount of time in this single session. I think that calls for a break at this point. I recognize there is still one more item outstanding from this session's agenda, which is the community budget veto. We will come back to that after a 15-minute break, and then we will carry on with the next session immediately after the budget community veto discussion. So it is now 3:45. Let's come back at 4:00 sharp for the discussion on the budget veto, and then we will carry on with the next agenda item. Thank you. We're going to get started again in just a moment. Please take your seats. Please, everybody, take your seats. And I would ask that the relevant panelists, come back to the front.
Who was that? The budget.
which would be Mathieu and Lisa.
So I'm gone now, right?
Yes, thank you, Chris. You are gone. Hello, if I could ask everybody to take their seats, and if Nigel or somebody could be so kind as to close the door. Thank you, everybody. We will start back up again. Thank you, everybody, for your attention in the last session. I know it was long, and I know we let it run long, but it was my sense that the dialogue had to happen and that it was of value to the community to let it run that long, particularly on the final topic. So with that, we are going to finish up the previous agenda item, which is an overview of the community budget veto, and then we will move into the final agenda item, which is really about the process and next steps. And with that, I will turn it over to Mathieu to provide an overview of community budget veto.
So the high-level overview on the budget veto power is one of the requirements from the CCWG from the start, and we've had it identified as a condition for the CWG requirements. There are actually different levels. ICANN has 5-year strategy plans and budgets. These would be subject to the veto process, exactly like the standard bylaws that we discussed. There is the PTI budget, the post-transition IANA budget. For a requirement of the CWG stewardship, this would be a separate budget with its own consultation process that would be held earlier than the current yearly budget from ICANN, so that the community, as requested by the CWG, can veto a particular PTI budget if, for instance, it is under-investing or not doing what is expected by the community, if it's not properly funded, for instance. So those are two different types of vetoes. And then there is the yearly annual operating plan and annual budget for ICANN. This one is more time-critical because if you had potential for a veto of 2 to 3 months, then it was feared by some that it would disrupt the organization. And what the option that's currently investigated, and which I think is very promising, and everyone is now relying on Xavier Calvert's expertise for that, is to separate the yearly budget and operating plan in two parts. One being part that is absolutely needed for continuity of operations, to be able to keep paying staff, be able to keep paying what is absolutely needed, and one part about the new initiatives and the things where there is some level of discretion. So there would be what Xavier calls a caretaker budget and the rest of the budget. And the veto of the community would only be on the rest of the budget and not on the caretaker, which would go on. That is currently the high line on the budget community power, which we want to get a sense whether you're comfortable with it, whether it's addressing the comments we've received, where we're sometimes expressing concerns about potential disruption of day-to-day operations for ICANN. Thank you, Olaf.
Thank you, Mathieu. Any questions, clarification on this issue? Oh, did I miss you again?
What I forgot to mention, Rolof, is the budget process at ICANN goes through very, very long interactions with the community during the ICANN meetings, public comments. That's still ongoing, and that's actually getting stronger and stronger thanks to the tireless efforts of our friend Giovanni. He is always working with Xavier to improve that, and he's not the only one. So that's still in place, and only if this doesn't work out and ICANN keeps not hearing the comments, then would this thing be taken into account. So once again, in the escalation ladder, we're very far on the right. It's only for exceptional cases.
There's a special budget and operational plan making clinic for legal people. It's called the ESOP.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I just have a quick comment because actually the budget has improved because of Giovanni SOP, but also because of the ATRNT2, who made some really strong requirements regarding the budget that it's being carried through now. So to Annabeth, what is important is that the actual, what I find is important regarding the budget community power is that the IANA budget, if that's vetoed, it's not supposed to stop the ICANN budget as such. That's going to be a separate part.
I am so sorry, I forgot to mention ATRT2. I feel so bad.
Refuse. We have... and we have Nigel at the microphone.
Yeah, we have just a... did you consider that not having this reserve operating 5 might actually act as a brake to not use this veto power, like in the shutdown of the US government? I mean, actually, it might be a positive thing.
It was considered. It was amply discussed within the CCWG, and I think what I'm describing here is the result of the balance that was trying to be struck between the continuity concerns and this necessity for this ICANN community budget community power to be a credible threat that in turn would provide the incentive for the engagement process to be perfectly successful. So we're definitely speaking of a compromise here between those two aspects. And I see your green card, so I want this put on the record.
Further questions? No. Okay, so that's then the end of the first part of this afternoon's sessions. And Byron, you're going to do the wrap-up, and then we move to process decision.
Yes, I'm going to wrap up this session, which is extended, and then we'll move into the process and next steps session. So it was certainly a good and vigorous debate, and a lot of, I think, very interesting points were raised for consideration, and I would say the goal of the session was twofold. One, for our CCWG members and participants to educate us on the current state of play and some of the issues, and also for our members in particular and also participants to listen to us as the community so that they can represent us to the best of their ability in the CCWG. In terms of what I heard, in regards to the first topic around the IRP, is that the community was definitely comfortable with the current exclusion of delegation and revocation, and also understands that there will be a time gap between assuming the transition happens from that point to the point that we as a community successfully complete a PDP on a number of outstanding questions or issues that have been raised by the FOI and others, and that we are comfortable with that but recognize that there are at least a couple of PDPs in our very near future. In terms of, there was a question or discussion around SO and AC accountability, so for us, sort of internal CCNSO accountability, and that the fact is that the work of internal accountability will be postponed to work stream 2 after the transition has effectively happened. And as part of that, there was support or acknowledgement and non-objection to future structural reviews will assess CCNSO accountability beyond what they already review, and that the room was okay with that. In terms of the conditional requirements requested or required by the CWG, we heard from Lisa and had some discussion there, and that the CWG is content right now with where the CCWG is at and the process to this point. So no flags there. In terms of the next item, removing board members, it appears that there is some recent consensus around this topic, and that the room was satisfied, or at least there was no objections with the current proposals for removing board members. There was certainly a fulsome discussion on the models, the current models in play, sole member versus sole designator. Pardon me. There was reasonable clarity on some of the key differences, particularly around sole member coming built in with a package of rights versus the sole designator having a built-in single right, and additional rights would be added a la carte as required, and presumably through the work of the CCWG. It was highlighted by some that to a certain degree there were so many steps before we would get to the end point of enforcement that we heard from a number that in a sense this may be endemic in terms of a discussion, and how much is enough was really one of the issues that I heard coming out of there, out of that discussion. In a sense, there's the old example, and a legal example of belts and suspenders. You know, there's no doubt my pants are held up better if I have a belt and suspenders, but quite frankly, a belt will hold my pants up just fine. Perhaps that was the final take on.
Are there any questions on this metaphor?
Belt and suspenders, yes. Belt and braces. Yes. I was going to say, are they still on? And that as a result, all of these processes allowed even some who were quite convinced on the sole member model to at least have enough confidence to allow them to accept the sole designator model. While that is not unanimous in the room, there seemed to be significant support for that. And in terms of the budget, certainly just what we just heard right here is seemed to be significant safeguards around our ability to owe the budget, but also it's enough of a process that it is unlikely to hijack just for political ends. And that is what I heard the room saying, and based on watching the room as I've just recounted this, I didn't see any material objections there. So I think this is a reasonable appraisal of the overall conversation that we've had over the last two and a half hours. Thank you. So we'll now move on to the next. And I don't want to jinx it by saying we will try to recover some time, but we will take the time that's needed. And that is really a discussion around what is the process the CCWG will be following and the next steps. And we have... Yeah, we'll make it into one discussion, and we have obviously board members and a representative from one of the regional organizations involved in this. Roloff, over to you.
Yeah, well, maybe as a brief introduction, I think we've all heard this discussion about, is there going to be a third round of comments? Is it going to be the same length if we need it, or is it going to be shorter? Can we do without a third round of comments because the plan didn't change much? I think we heard that there are quite a few changes here. So over to Mathieu, and you explain us what the discussion is about, right?
Thank you, Rudolf. Well, the first thing must not be underestimated is that the CCWG accountability has to finalize a report. And that might be actually quite important to make sure we get the messaging right, because one of the comments we've received was that it was confusing. So there's a little bit of work on that. There's also quite a bit of work in refining some of the proposals and obviously taking into account the latest developments. And that's our best-case scenario right now, is to have a proposal ready around the 20th of November, a report. Then comes the question whether we need a third public comment or not. That is not a question that the group has considered at this point. So it's pretty much for me to hear what the sense of the room is, whether the level of change requires a new public comment. It's certainly going to be an issue that we'll discuss in the group actually later today. And then a reminder of the process itself. Once the CCWG has reached consensus on a draft final report, or a final draft report, is to be provided to these SO and ACs for endorsement. There are 6 chartering organizations in the CCWG. So it would come to the CCNSO and would have to endorse, just like you did with CWG stewardship. It was not endorsed by one or more of the SOAC, or if one of them were not to accept one of the recommendations, we would have to go back, look at a supplemental draft report, address the concerns, and then send back for another round of endorsement. I believe that would be good. Then, and only then, if once we have approval from all the SONACs, or we have found these 2 rounds, we'll submit something to the ICANN board, which will transmit to the NTIA and has the possibility, on a supermajority decision, to comment next to the report, thinks that part of the recommendations would adversely affect the global public interest. That's the whole process. How much time do we need? If we don't go for another public comment, that means we would submit to the chartering organization end of November, and maybe if all goes well, or went well, we might consider mid-January approval by the board, basically. So here in this graph, you see that we are already on the very tight. If we go for a third public comment, it means that we are probably speaking, depending on whether we can fine-tune the process of an endorsement, a transmission to the ICANN board, probably around February. Very fast. Or Marrakesh, follow a slightly more relaxed time frame. So the facts are here, and I wanted to hear the sense of the room on that, because that's one of the key discussions that we have to make this week in the CCWG. For me, Rudolf.
Okay, thank you, Maciej. So the first one is off already, if I understand correctly.
Yes, and the blue things on this chart are the times of transmission to NTIA.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, I think the first one is definitely off.
Yeah, so we're considering the second, the third, and the fourth. So there's only one that still brings us within the appropriate timeline.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So the question for the room is, can you give us your sentiment or your... Yeah, so we're not going to vote. This is an impression. Okay, I'll finish because otherwise I have to do rephrasing afterwards. Problem is that I think to be really clear on that, you have to know what the difference is between the present proposal and the adjusted proposal. You've had some information on that. So I think we all understand that this is just kind of a guesstimate. You cannot be exact on this. And only really judge if you need a second or a third round of comments if you have seen the actual finalized third proposal. Before we do that, Keith.
Just like to make some personal observations, but from my perspective as an IANA transition group member, that to me, we have to measure whether the proposal has met community support. And that's not ICANN community, that is the entire internet community support. So it's vital to me to satisfy myself on that group that whatever happens that is substantially different in the NAMES proposal going forward has met that community support, which means to me that the value of a full public consultation is very high. Otherwise, the ICG may well have to do its own further round of consultation. So taking that as a proviso in the discussions.
That's clear. But the key word is substantial.
Yeah. Well, yes, and there is no doubt that the accountability recommendations are going to be substantial in terms of a change from the current proposal, because there is nothing too much about accountability in the current proposal.
That's what I thought you meant the change between the second and the third proposal of the CCWG being substantial. You're talking about the change in what you have now, Mike.
Rulof, thank you. Notwithstanding timelines, I'm of the view that it is always preferential to have additional opportunity. At the same time, I think, Mathieu, sorry, this is going to tax everybody's brains. I suspect people have gotten into a pattern of working. But I think we need to try and be creative to find out how we can abbreviate timelines without impacting on your people to comment. So, for example, I would suggest, and this is just a thought, for example, putting out a change document, what's changed between the previous proposal and the current proposal, out as a document for comment really quickly, possibly even while the final wording of Proposal 3 is being written, might be one of those ways. Really giving people multiple opportunities to engage with the specifics, as well as a very limited but still an opportunity once the whole thing has been, once you've got a single picture, because yes, one chapter may not have changed, but changed the previous chapter, which has dependencies, may cause an impact. And I think that we need to be creative. We need to see how we can contract time periods so that it doesn't drag us beyond Marrakesh. But I think it would be really an opportunity to engage with it, but in a very foliated way.
Interesting.
And Keith,
suggestion.
I don't know if you think that would be acceptable from what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to turn to the room, Stephen.
Rolof, I don't understand how you condition the public review or process on whether there's a substantive change in this report. You're changing models, for goodness sake, and if that isn't a substantial change, I don't know what is. I see no way this can go forward without a public comment period.
I wasn't. If I gave the impression that I was passing an opinion on this, that was not the idea because I haven't formed an opinion yet. So, not the case. I just want to hear what the room feels. And your opinion is there has to be a third round of comments. Anybody else?
I'm suggesting that maybe we could test whether anyone is of another view that the one that has been suggested so far, which is that an extra public comment is needed.
I'm a bit reluctant to do that because I don't think I'm not sure if it's a fair question. That we can try. And you would phrase it, are there...
I'm just wanting to check, just to the temperature. We've heard three interventions in favor of an extra public comment. If someone feels strongly that no public comment should be made because we need to get done with it, then it's time to say it. Because otherwise I'm going to take an input from the CCNSO to the CCWG saying there's a rather large sense of the room that an extra public comment is needed.
So let me phrase it. Is there anybody who has a different opinion and who is willing to argument it? And I think Pierre.
Yeah, that's not exactly being against a new call for comment, but I'd like to be sure that taking this time is not going to put us arrive too late, in fact. So what? Yeah, you're right. We can say that, and I'm of the opinion that I don't care if the Congress is patient or not to look at our paper. So maybe we could take 2 years more. That's not a problem. I think Mathieu would not agree with that. But I think this is something we have
you
to think
You just want
about.
To remain in command of AFNIC for the next 2 years, is it?
That's not exactly the case. Just to point out that the question is also, are we ready to take the risk to be late? And to me, the answer is yes, but this is a question that we have to have.
We're not sure about the consequences. Peter.
Thank you, Rulof. I think it's very hard to tell at this point whether that will be necessary or not, a third comment. I disagree that the change in model is fundamental to argue in favor or against the need for a public comment, because as we've discussed in detail, the essence of both models is what is of relevance to us. The difference between the models is not large enough for this room, for the majority, large majority of the people in this room, to have a strong opinion either way. And there's much more to the new proposal than just the model. I think on the CCWG will have the responsibility to judge whether they, in all fairness, took in board the comments that came in and that suggests constructive changes to the document. And at that point, when they've done that, they will be able to say whether these inclusions might conflict, whether they have chosen one way or another if two conflicting comments came in. So I'm not arguing either way, but I think it's just too early to tell. And we've selected highly skilled individuals who've been working on this for a year. I would value their opinion very much rather than my own at this stage.
But Peter, can you shed light on what would change the balance for you? What would really change it in such a way that you would say, no, this is such a difference from the previous proposal? What would tip the balance?
I think in general the balance would be tipped if people on the CCWG, through their internal discussions, and we know that they have, they are outspoken in their thoughts, that they would realize that the new proposal creates a friction with a position that has been taken by previous input from their group or from additional comments in the sector. If they, I mean, they are in a position to judge best of all whether the new proposal will, but to put it bluntly, annoy someone because they felt that their voice hasn't been heard.
Lay the question out of that later. I think Nigel was there.
I'm going to echo Keith's words, which were very nicely put and very sage. The value of comment when you've made a significant change in the community, including the non-CCNSO members of our community, is very high. I'm not specific, say I, at this point, die in a ditch over anything. I'm just echoing what Pierre said. You know, we want to be careful we don't make the risk of missing the deadline. Fine. But we don't want to make the risk of making the deadline with a half-baked proposal. If we, in our rush, go with a half-baked proposal, which either the ICG sees as obviously insufficient for going forward, or worse still, we manage to bully and persuade the ICG to let it out, and then the US government or Congress or I don't know who turns around and says, that's a half-baked proposal. And the value of a public comment period.
Nigel, I think I wouldn't be surprised if you had full consensus in this room on what you just said. Thing is that
that's good. And then, because we can leave it there and catch up some time.
Well, the thing is that what we're a bit trying to do, I think, is getting the sense from the room, do you think that the changes are so significant? Because that's the word you used too. If there's a, no, please.
You asked me.
No, I didn't.
Yep.
What was the question?
I heard a question. If you don't want me to come back to the microphone, don't ask me a question.
Okay, I'll never make that mistake again.
Do you want me to answer whatever question it was you were posing?
No.
Good.
Thank you. So what we're trying to discover is, do you think the changes that you've heard this afternoon, are they so substantial that we have to have another round of comments? And the opinions vary on that. Go back to Byron.
No, I just want to make a comment as a member of the CCNSO like any other, not as the chair here. And that is just to pick up on Pierre's point. I take a different view of that. I think we must take into consideration the risk associated with missing the dates. Not hitting material milestones significantly puts at risk the success of a proposal making it through the U.S. Congress and allowing the contract to lapse in September of 2016. And we shouldn't kid ourselves that we can just take whatever time we want if we want to get this done now. Because as we head into that U.S. election period, all bets are off, get accepted. In fact, I think we have to assume that after September 2016, if we're not ready and done, likelihood is this window is closed and it is unclear when the next window go through a transition process would be, but it would strike me as a number of years. So we shouldn't discount that serious risk, and that should factor into the process and next steps. I'm not saying it's determinant. I'm not advocating for half-baked proposals. Absolutely not. But we should not just dismiss the risk, the material risks associated with missing key milestones here.
Martin.
Yeah, I must admit I'm very much of Byron that if we go into that red zone, then we are at serious risk of start all this again in 4 years' time. And I would think that certainly for this community to lose that opportunity very, very carefully, where that was something that we could. But I wonder, because certainly I am conscious that there is a substantial change that has come in with the where consensus seems to be developing. And I think that I wonder whether there is a nice halfway house which allows us to be to look at a very precise consultation, just looking at the changes with a very, very clear question to the community, with a very clear explanation to go with that question, allow us to go for a shorter consultation, 30 days, perhaps even allow that, rather than going for a 40-day consultation, which then arises our position between. I'm just sort of putting that forward as being, you know, is this the thing, the area where it might.
As co-chair, how do you feel about that? Because I think you, within your previous comment, one of your previous comments, there was slightly hidden the fact that we got, as a working group, we got feedback on the clarity of the role, and I think you mentioned that we had to do some work on that as well. So what Martin suggested, and I think it was also Mike's suggestion, more or less, that to be creative, come up with a kind of a change document. Those two.
And I'm just going to jump in here for a minute because there is, I know there's a CCWG meeting starting shortly, and there's a CCNSO council meeting, so we have about 5 more minutes to wrap this up.
At this point, I would say what I'm hearing is useful. Certainly something that I'll convey, that will convey probably can be used, Rudolf or Jordan or Brother Giovanni, to the, in the discussion that we'll have in the CCWG. Very, very aware of the political risk and with the timeline. We are very, very aware of the need to get community buy-in and to be able to document it, the area from the INTIA. And we're facing yet another decision to make. Pressure. Fun.
Well, yeah, I think it's not so difficult to come up with a conclusion from this discussion, and it is that I think we probably all agree that, if possible, a third round of comments on an improved document would be best, but there are quite some arguments against the delay that would provoke. So I think Mike's input that we have to be creative and to try to combine the two into something that still works is going to be a challenge for us. Well, hand back to you, Mr. Chair, so you can do the winding up.
Thank you. And thank you, Roloff. So that was a slightly abbreviated version of that session, but I think it was probably very helpful for the member to hear the general, I would say, the general, dare I use the word consensus? No, the general feedback that we heard. Strike that from the record. There was some clarity in terms of expecting the next report on November 20th or thereabout. Certainly there is no clarity at this point on whether there'll be a third round of comments, though that is a topic for discussion even later today, I believe, at the meeting just mentioned. And whatever comes out of the next iteration of the CCWG's proposal will be coming back to the 6 chartering organizations for their approval, and the CWG in terms of its contingencies, absolutely. And what I heard was potentially the transmission to the board in the February timeframe, maybe as late as Marrakesh, which, as we can see from the slide above and to my left, you're right, presents some significant potential logistical challenges, to put it mildly.
I don't think it's logistical.
All right, I'll just leave it at significant challenges. I do want to reiterate one of the points made, that the value of public comment is very high, and we heard that from more than one person. And certainly what we heard by and large is not knowing what's in a next iteration of the proposal, that it would be likely highly desirable to have another public comment period. And I think that sums up what I heard over the past 45 minutes. So I want to say thank you very much. I know it was a long afternoon. Absolutely critical topics to be discussed, and I think we as a community or we in this room have provided significant input, thoughts, ideas to the members and the participants of the CCWG, and obviously CCWG members have provided substantive content back to us to help us think about very complicated issues. So I'd like to thank all the panelists, certainly Mathieu for being in a in a friendly audience, but on the firing line here, and without a doubt, Roloff, who stepped in to be the moderator because Leslie, unfortunately, was sick. Roloff stepped in at the last minute and shouldered a significant load. For anybody who's moderated a session like this, it's not a trivial task. So thank you, Roloff. And again, thank you to all the CCWG members and the CWG members before them for all the work that has gone to getting to us to a place like this.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Dear all, the CCNSO Council meeting will convene at 5 p.m. Just so if you move up, and it will be a very short one this time.
I think there is a way, and I think the abbreviated time will do it. I mean, you're sort of starting to get down to real semantics, but I think a 30-day period of real consultation.